Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. I will cover now the second practice, the first practice, suffering and justice, second practice, adapting to conditions, third practice, seeking nothing, and the fourth practice, practicing the Dharma. Adapting to conditions. As mortals, we are ruled by conditions, not by ourselves. All suffering and joy we experience depend on conditions. If we should be blessed by some great reward, such as fame or fortune, it is a fruit of a seed planted by us in the past. When conditions change, it ends. Why delight in its existence? But while success and failure depend upon conditions, the mind neither waxes nor wanes. Those who remain unmoved by the wind of joy silently follow the path. And one of the lines I like that in that very much is, those who are unmoved by the wind of joy. And one of the aspects of training is that we often come into Buddhist practice wanting to deal with our suffering, with our difficulties, with all our problems. And we don't actually fully see how much our problems are the flip side of what we're grasping after, desiring and wanting. And if you get caught up in enjoyment, in success, in praise, in all these opposites, naturally when the other side comes, it's very hard. You feel depressed, you feel crushed, you feel hurt. And a lot of Buddhist practice is, it's okay to have the up. It's not wrong to enjoy something, but it's like it says in the Sharangama, they have the teaching of the eight great distractions, or they're often called the eight worldly dharmas: gain and loss, fame and disgrace, pleasure and pain, praise and blame. And part of life is the fact that naturally there's a feeling associated with all of it. Nobody really wants pain rather than pleasure. You know, nobody wants blame rather than praise. You know, gain, loss rather than gain. And all of those things have a feeling attached to it. If somebody criticizes me, I feel it. If somebody praises me, I feel it. The whole point of training isn't that one isn't, you're not supposed to feel it. And actually prefer one to the other, but you're not getting caught up in what comes in. You realize there's really nothing going on when you have praise or blame, that there's nothing really, gain and loss aren't really that different, that there's really nothing you can hold on to with gain and loss. And this, first of all, when you do this, it greatly reduces the intensity of the suffering. If you get caught up in the opposite, like if you really get, in a way, intoxicated with praise, then you'll be very crushed when you get criticized. If you're intense on gain, then the loss will hurt you. If you realize it doesn't matter that much, oh well, you know, the stock market goes up, it goes down. People like you, they don't like you. You're not living on others' opinions, as in praise and blame. You're not getting caught up in externals, like in gain and loss. You're not, you know, seeking these things. You're just bowing to whatever comes in. And adapting to conditions is actually just being willing to kind of let go of what the self wants and asking yourself, what is really good here to do, you know, and that's actually, And then there's a natural flow to existence, a constant changing of conditions. And in order to be in harmony with this flow, we need to move in accordance with the needs and requirements of each moment and be willing just to ask what is good to do. And that good to do is what's good for us, for others, and the bit most good in the deepest way we can find at the moment. And then let go when another need arises. And a lot of adapting to conditions is finding the middle way, the way between, so we don't get caught in the opposites. And we also don't get caught in what stops us from adapting to conditions is kind of hard opinionation, hard judgments, hard feelings of how things should be. Like Dogen, when he came back from China and returned to Japan after being a monk in China for a number of years, they asked him, "What did you bring back from China?" And he said, "All I brought back was a soft and flexible mind." That is a mind that can adjust and adapt to whatever conditions arise. You know, it's not holding on to how things should be, what we want, and all the rest, and just seeing what is good here, what's really going on, and kind of focusing on just having a good intention, and then being willing to pay attention to what results flow out of your behavior. Sometimes we blind ourselves. We don't adapt to conditions because we only look at our intention. Well, I was trying to help. I was trying to do good. And in order to train, you have to actually learn from the karma that flows into your life. Like you try to help somebody and they're angry. Well, what just happened? How did that happen? You can't just say, well, I was, look at yourself. You have to kind of look, what was I seeing? What was I not seeing? What was I not perceiving? And to have that soft, flexible mind that's willing to see, oh, there was another way to go about it. Or, oh, I did something wrong, even if I can't figure out what I did. And a lot of adapting to conditions is letting go of that hard opinionation that we have about how things should be, of what good and bad is, of letting go of the mind that is certain. There's a nice saying I remember reading where somebody asked a great master, what is the teaching of all great masters? And he said, nothing is certain. Well, actually, the nothing certain is the certainty we have that we're right, that this is what is needed to be done. And we have to just do it, make our best, and then be willing to accept that we may be wrong. It's like when you get ordained as a Buddhist monk, there's a line in this service I always like, that all bodhisattvas, when converted to the truth for the first times, minds are hard and set and cannot be broken. And that's that mind that we often have, that this is the way things should be. This is the way the world is. And actually, we apply it to training. This is what training is. This is how I should be. Rather than adapting to conditions and being willing just to see just what's good here, which changes all the time, just like in your training, what is good today and it may not be what's good tomorrow. People are frequently asking me, you know, almost in their practice, what should they be doing? And I usually have to tell them, you have to adapt to conditions. You know, if I can't really tell anybody how much they should be meditating, because for one person, meditating 20 minutes a day is a great accomplishment. For another one, they should be doing much more. Somebody's life, somebody has a new child. If they can meditate for 5 minutes, that's an accomplishment. And adapting to conditions is learning just to ask what is good to do again and not demanding that the conditions we are facing are a problem or are wrong. We're not asking for others to be different, for the world to be differently. And most importantly, we're not really asking for what's flowing through our hearts to be different. You know, whatever we're feeling, whatever's coming up for us, are the conditions we face, and it's how can we do good with these conditions? I have greed coming up. How can I help this karma? I have fear coming up. What is good to do with the fear? I have despair coming up. What is good to do with the despair? And not think it's a problem that you have this feeling, but the training is, how can I help this karma? You're in a dirty room. How do I help the karma of the dirty room? And if you actually don't have any time, then you have to just let it go and realize there's nothing fundamentally wrong with something being dirty. And that's adapting to conditions mean we have to trust and act in faith that everything is fundamentally pure, that there's not a problem, and that our training is to help the truth to be seen and experienced where we are. It's like if you're in a dirty room, don't view it as a problem. Don't view it as fundamentally unclean or something wrong. Just it would be good to clean. The same thing with our hearts. There's nothing wrong with this dirt in our hearts. Just means we need to clean. And you can't say, but it's taking too long. It takes as long as it takes. And and in a way it takes, we're cultivating by doing that. We're letting go in Buddhist training constantly of what the self demands, the way we think things should be, and just being open to getting ourselves out of the way and letting, you know, as Dogen puts it, when the Buddha does all and you find this doing effortless and without worrying about it, you gain freedom from suffering and become yourself Buddha. And you let Buddha do all by not letting yourself be run around just by what the self wants, but let the fire and wind of the precepts drive you. And this takes faith, because in a way, you're allowing all your greed, hate, and delusion find their real home. And that's one of the deep purposes of training. And with the opposites of gain and loss, fame and disgrace, pleasure and pain, praise and blame, when we see it as just the opposites, we can actually learn to kind of, oh, this is what's going on. I'm just getting caught up in praise. I'm just getting caught up in pleasure. Or I'm just getting caught up in pain. And learn just to let go. Trust that there's something deeper than the pain. I've met people who are in constant pain and they're doing fine. And I've met many people who have nothing really going wrong in their lives and they're in despair. And we don't need to understand everything about the opposites. All we need to do is, like the Buddha doesn't ask us to find the cause of greed or the cause of our suffering. All he does is he asks us to recognize what's going on and that we don't have to act upon it. You know, I can recognize, yes, I like pleasure. I don't like pain. And that's actually a very functional part of the human existence, that we, you know, there's a teaching in painful things. There's a teaching in the pain. But since we, as Bodhidharma says, we don't control what conditions come into our lives. You will not control gain and loss. If the U.S. economy crashes tremendously, whether you like it or not, probably almost everybody's going to have great loss. If it booms, it'll probably help us all. We don't control those conditions. You know, if there's war and peace, if you have illness or health. We don't control the conditions flowing into our lives, but we don't have to be moved by them. And we realize that nothing, you know, those who remain unmoved by the wind of joy silently follow the path. You know, while success and failure depend upon condition, the mind and really our heart neither waxes nor wanes. And to do this, all the practice in Buddhism, it comes from a faith that what we really want, what really matters, lies in the depths of our heart, in the stillness, not in the mind moving and grasping and getting caught up in things, but in being still and open, and that nothing is really being affected in this flow. We think something's being hurt in pain, but it's just a sensation. We think something can be hurt when somebody criticizes us. It's just an opinion, somebody else's transient opinion we're clinging to. And we actually think it's really nice to be praised, and we're just being clinging to a transitory opinion. We have pleasure. Well, actually, you know, it's just something we experience, and then it'll soon be like a dream. And the very word Buddha means awakened. And in a way, we're awakening from this dream of birth and death. It's not a dream in this. It's not a dream in the sense it's not real. It's a dream in the sense that you give a meaning to all these little triumphs and failures, all these ways we're hurt and feel pleasure, all these ways we cling to the drama and the story of our lives and get caught up in, you know, really in the story of it, in its tragedies and triumphs. And when you realize that it all is like, as it says in the Diamond Sutra, a bubble in a stream, a child's laugh, a phantasm, a dream, and that, you know, you can actually start pointing yourself to awakening from this dream, the dream of the importance that you give it. It's happening, and there's no reason to choose pain over pleasure. There's no reason to choose loss over gain. It would be almost like driving a car and not caring if you crashed it. It's just normal enough that you don't, you know, want to cause pain. But however, you don't control the conditions. One of the teachings people often have is when they have a severe health problem, they realize that they're not in control. They have been living their whole lives thinking they're in control. And a very common thing people will say is they'll get cancer or something, and they realize they're not in control. You know, we're not in control of the conditions. You know, we were born, you know, if you're successful in life, a lot of it is actually just good karma. You're born in the richest country, the richest country in human history. Whether we like it or not, you know, whether we recognize it or not, that's very good karma in terms of finances and all the rest. I remember being living on a minimum wage part-time job, and actually I was doing reasonably well. And, you know, it's just karma. And and a lot of training is the middle way in adapting to conditions, of not getting caught up in the opposites, not getting caught up in what we want and what we don't want, and finding a balance, just like there's a balance in the very meditation you're doing, a balance between bringing the mind back, which takes discipline, and just accepting what's there. You know, there's a, how to make that soft effort, which is a balance, because you can actually push hard and kind of try to keep things out, or you could just be, put no energy in and just let your mind drift endlessly. Instead, you're both accepting what's going on and putting actually what takes a lot of effort into what's going on, and both elements need to be there in order for the training to work. Because in a way, the middle way isn't a discipline to control the conditions, but it's a discipline to be open to what happens, make the right choices with what happens, and be willing to see it clearly so we can learn from what happens. Because everything is a teaching, It's like when we suffer, we have pleasure, gain and loss, fame and disgrace, praise and blame. In a way, they're all Dharma teachings for us in how we relate to them. And then I think I'll start just briefly on seeking nothing, which is the next part. Seeking nothing. People of this world are deluded. They're always longing for something, always in a word, seeking. But the wise wake up. They choose reason over custom. They fix their minds on the sublime and let their bodies change with the seasons. All phenomena are empty. They contain nothing worth desiring. Calamity forever alternates with prosperity. To dwell in the three realms is to dwell in a burning house. To have a body is to suffer. Does anyone with a body know peace? Those who understand this detach themselves from all that exists and stop imagining or seeking anything. The sutras say to seek is to suffer. To seek nothing is bliss. When you seek nothing, you're on the path. There's many, in a way, Bodhidharma's pointing again to what I was just saying. We're trying to awaken from this dream of birth and death by seeing that there's nothing we can hold on in this dream of birth and death. As Dogen put it, when we die, we face our death with nothing but our good and bad karma. You know, our possessions, our house, our reputation, all, you know, vanish like a dream. Even the memory of us vanishes like a dream. You know, and right now I'll just try to explain one point on this before I stop. Although you're seeking nothing, in a way, in order to train, you actually need the desire to train. And as, you know, and the desire in practice can be a friend or a foe. At first, it actually spurs us to come and practice. We want to change. We want to end suffering. We want to be different. We don't want to be under the control of all these defilements. And that's probably what brought most of you here, presumably. So we're actually want to end suffering. But if we're always desiring something different, if we always want to be things to be other than they are right now, we are actually still causing suffering. And the aspect of training that we knew is we're using the desire to free ourselves from suffering to point us to the place where we start letting go of the specifics of suffering and are actually willing to undergo the suffering of training in order to free ourselves from the suffering of birth and death. And there is suffering in training. All of you, I'm sure there's people in this room when you woke up this morning thought, I would like to turn over and stay in bed. You know, I would like to stop and take a break now. I would like to not be on this schedule doing all of this. And there's a lot of aspects of training. To sit still with suffering actually is difficult. It's actually suffering. But you're using that suffering to cut yourself out of to find the place of the real suffering. And the suffering of training is pointing you to finding to kind of letting go of asking specifically what happens. Any specific that you're asking for in your spiritual practice is going to make things worse. You're using training and the difficulty in training to help you let go of things and just be open to whatever comes. It's like in meditation. You're just trying to let go of everything when you wanders off and just keep bringing yourself to being there. But you're not asking for anything special to happen. You're not asking to feel good. You're not asking really for anything if you want to meditate. If you want to be peaceful when you meditate, you're going to cause yourself great suffering because frequently you won't be, and you don't control those conditions. You know, pain and pleasure, all these opposites are going to come in. And rather than avoiding it, we try to embrace it all with an open heart. And in a way, we're using the suffering of training to cut through the roots of our suffering. And in a way, rather than using it like, I have a desire to train, a word I like better is we have to keep an aspiration to train, our intention to train, and point ourselves to the deepest place we can find. You know, like in one Buddhist practices, one beautiful way of describing Buddhist training is in Shantideva, where it begins with awakening to the mind to seek the bodhicitta, to seek the heart of Buddha. And we have to have that mind, but that mind actually has us let go of seeking anything specific. We're seeking what is sublime, as Bodhidharma puts it. And we can't. And you're not, and there's no specific that you're seeking. There's nothing you can encounter in birth and death that's outside the path, that's an obstacle, or is that anything more than like a dream? And that means whatever you encounter, you bow to. It's okay. And that, and the suffering you encounter in bowing to the difficulties, the hardship, all those difficult circumstances are the very things that can free you, because you learn you're not being bound by any of it. While if you don't use the suffering of training, if you don't use that aspiration, you keep getting caught up really in the stream of birth and death, in the dream of what I want and what I don't want. And it controls us and binds us. While we're using the training to find the heart that realizes it can just be open to anything, that nothing that comes into it is a problem. Everything is the life of Buddha. Everything is clean and pure. Some of it feels good, some of it feels bad. And we adapt to the conditions by then doing what is good, but without clinging to any of it, without even clinging to the results of it, because we don't control those. Those are conditions that are always flowing. And in a way, in Buddhism, one way you can view Buddhist teaching is just the very meaning of the third pure precept the Buddha said was the three pure precepts, cease from evil, do good. And the original translation of the original wording of the third precept, instead of being do good for others, was purify your heart. And it's actually by purifying the heart is how we get the self out of the way and do good for others. And we purify our heart by holding on to a pure intention, but then not demanding or seeking anything. We're not grasping our desires. We're not pushing away our fears. We're not demanding if we're in heaven or hell. We hold to that pure intention, and we don't seek anything externally. And it's when you're seeking something, you're actually thinking you need to have something. I need to be treated this way. I need to feel this way. I need not to be afraid. I need this. I need that. And in a way, we're, again, in a sort of a dream where we're grasping very piddly things like others' opinions, temporary feelings, things that have no real substance. When you look back at your life, they often do seem like a dream. Your anger, your desire, your ambition, what people thought of you, how much something hurt. All of you are sitting here now. Where is all the anger you've ever felt in your life? What happened to it? How many good meals have you eaten in your life? If you're hungry right now, did it really matter? If you've been afraid, where's that fear? If you've been... And we let it go. And we just try to open our hearts and just realize that it doesn't fundamentally matter. It's how we relate to it will matter, because that's how we find the freedom. And the things we think that are important aren't. And the real jewel, what our heart longs for, wants, desires, the treasure house is there. You know, it's like you're playing with these piddly things and the real treasure's right there. And it's why when people often experience an awakening, spiritually open up, they'll realize that how little all the stuff mattered. And it's even why sometimes when I meet somebody again who has gone through some great amount of suffering, sometimes they're actually grateful for it, because if it points their heart to finding the place that is free and unbounded, get in touch with the real treasure house, all of that other stuff has no meaning, no fundamental importance. It's like they were dreaming of suffering, dreaming of success, dreaming of all this stuff, and it's all like a dream. Homage to all the Buddhas in all the worlds. Homage to all the Bodhisattvas in all the worlds. Homage to the scripture of great wisdom.